Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Emerging Enterprise Radio, featuring high growth companies and their trusted advisors.
Welcome to another episode of Emerging Enterprise. I'm your producer, Kevin Finn, and in the studio joining me today is Jake Dudley, and I just have to imagine, he's from Hive Atlanta, and he also works over at Rome, but I just have to imagine that, I imagine Van's tied up somewhere in the back of your trunk, or is it your basement?
I told him, look, I'm taking over today, and so you're just going to have to deal with it. And he fought. And
he fought?
He shouldn't have fought, because now he's in trouble.
He's in trouble. Trunk, car somewhere. Van, if you're listening in, we're not coming for
Don't
you.
Don't tell my secrets, Kevin.
So, Jake, what's up? What have you been up to? I haven't seen you in a few weeks. It's been maybe a month.
It has been a while.
Definitely.
Yeah. Lots of cool things going on. You know, the events director at Rome, we stay pretty busy there. We have weekly events going on. So I'm in charge of coordinating all of those and planning that.
You're the reason they have great coffee there, right?
That is not because of me. That's because the great, great folks at Land of a Thousand Hills. They're awesome. But yeah, so we're plugging along and we're redoing some things and launching some campaigns and working on our blog. And things are fun there at Rome. And then of course, with Hive going on, we have our big Hive gathering that you heard about last time I was in the house.
This upcoming Tuesday.
This coming Tuesday night. It's coming up. HiveATL.com/Hive Gathering. So yeah, that's coming up this week. So we've been, just full speed ahead with that. We're finishing up the last minute details now.
That is awesome. Well, you brought some guests into the studio with us today.
I
some
did.
We've had before, some are new, they're fresh meat.
Right.
They don't know what they're in for. So will you introduce them?
Yeah, I will. First, we've got my friend who I first went 2D to 3D, which you'll hear about in a little bit, with my friend here, Jason Domini. I wish we had
beard Domini.
Like a clap track there. That'd be really, really awesome.
I need to work on that. So,
yeah.
Jason.
You need to work on your clap track.
And then we also have my friend who I mispronounced his last name several times, so hopefully I don't do it right now. It's my friend Jerome Libba.
It was close. It was a good effort, man. You got the first
That's why
half.
I don't introduce people if I don't have to, because I always butcher someone's name.
Yeah.
It's totally okay, man. 20 years in this country, it's been pronounced right once. So
tell us, you're from South Africa, right?
Yeah,
I just found this out.
Yeah, born in South Africa and immigrated to the States from Zaire in the early 90s.
And you were how old then?
I was seven.
Seven.
Yeah, young enough to get the accent pretty sufficiently beaten out of me by the folks in Tennessee.
So 7-year-old girls were crazy about you.
Oh my God, it was amazing. And I have an
identity. They still are, actually.
I have an identity.
Wow.
I have two goddaughters, so they're a fan of me. But
that's cool.
No, and I have an identical twin brother whose name is Justin. So it was like a buy one get one free deal.
There
for
you
everybody.
Go.
Everybody loved
that's,
it.
That's 7-year-old. That's. I'm not going to say that.
Buy one South African, get one free.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was an immigrant labor force thing. You know, we're making it work.
America.
Well, I'm really excited to have you guys on to talk. We're going to talk a lot about community today. Thankfully, you know, when Van said, hey, Jake, come and do this, it's conveniently 4 days before an event that I'm putting on that I really want everybody that's listening to this to come to.
Bonnaroo?
Yes. I love music.
Bonnaroo for entrepreneurs.
Yes.
So.
That's right. Yeah. So with Hive Gathering coming up, I really wanted to focus on community because that's what Hive ATL is all about. And both of you guys have had the pleasure of being a part of one of our events, right? You guys came to the last one back in October.
Yep.
And so that's really one of the reasons I really was excited that you guys chose to be on today, because I want to hear about your take on that, but also want to hear about what each of you guys do. So let's start there. Jason, tell us about you and what you do and the role that community plays in your job and what you do.
Yeah, so this is really interesting. Again, my name is Jason Domini. I work with the Dalton Agency here in Atlanta, which is a marketing agency in Atlanta, as a social media manager for them here. And I've been in the social media space specifically for the past year and a half, but more than that, probably I would say the past 6.5 years in the social engagement, that kind of space overall. However, the story of how I got into community building and social as a result of it actually started about 16 years ago when I opened my first coffee shop. So I opened a coffee shop on the campus of Augusta State University called Coffee House. It's pretty clever. It's a clever name. It's catchy. It tells you exactly what it is.
Was it an actual house? Because that would have been even cooler.
I was actually in the school's cafeteria. Okay. Back then, Augusta was Augusta College was still a small college, and I actually started it in the cafeteria at Augusta College.
Okay.
And that was so successful that I was asked to move to Athens and open up one in downtown Athens, and I did as a community coffee shop. And the kind of the crux of why I created that coffee shop was a place to build community and a place to provide an avenue for students to get engaged in their community outside of just class. So get active with helping out with the homeless, get active in helping out with other people that are doing really cool things in Athens, because Athens is a very socially conscious city. It has been for as long as I can remember. And so I started this coffee shop as a way to build community in Athens. And I like to think of it as the original Facebook, because that's what it did. It actually connected people. It got people engaged. And so I've been doing social for, I would say, 16 years now. I started in social media when it first started, 6.5 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
When it first started.
Wow, that was very forward thinking of you, just to catch on to social media and say, this is going to be something, where everyone else was like, that's just a fad.
So yeah, it was Facebook for you first?
No, it was Twitter for me first, because Facebook wasn't open to
everybody.
Oh, that's right.
So Twitter opened up first to anyone, and then
2007?
Facebook. 2006, I believe.
Okay.
Although I think it was 2007. Yeah. That's correct.
What, for Facebook?
Yes.
Yeah. No, for
Twitter.
Twitter.
Because I know my wife had a Facebook account with her university in like 2000.
Well, I actually think Facebook opened in 2006 because I graduated from high school and I had an account before I went to college.
Yeah, that was me, because I remember, but I had to have an invite.
Yeah,
get on Facebook. I still had to have an invite, but it was open for high school.
I knew people. It's cool.
Yeah, and then you had to have a .edu account. Yeah,
exactly.
And so I started in Twitter and then on Facebook.
Okay.
I was working for a coffee roaster in Charlotte, and they had no marketing budget. And what I realized is that everything that I pushed out via those channels went out to exponentially more people than they had listening to them already.
Yeah.
And so immediately I realized the power of social media. Plus I hosted a lot of events, and I would push it out via social media, and participation was always full.
Yeah.
And it's just because I was getting it out to a lot larger audience. Your net is, when you throw that net out with social media, it goes out to a lot more people.
Definitely.
That's cool. Well, thanks for sharing that, Jason.
You're welcome.
Jerome.
Yeah. Give it a shot.
Liberation. Jerome Liberation.
The Liberator.
Now I got it.
I feel like every time I'm going to say it, I'm going to struggle with it. So just, sorry.
It's totally okay. You can just go by Jerome.
Okay.
Yeah. We're good.
Jay Slice.
That's good. Yeah. Tell us about who you are, what you do, and the role that community plays in what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it. So I'm actually finishing up a doctorate, and 6 weeks from today is when I graduate.
Congratulations, sir.
Yeah, nothing
clap
says.
Clap track.
Yep, clap track. Nothing says good times and a happy wife like being done with 400 plus credits. It's awesome. But, you know, I actually, my doctorate is in chiropractic. And during the time that I've been in school, I've actually done postgraduate work in a variety of different specialty arenas. So there's a lot of eligibility to put some letters behind my name and get my own custom alphabet. But essentially, the primary degree is chiropractic. And then I specialize in traumatic brain injury, concussion, movement disorders, childhood developmental disorders, all sorts of different things. But, you know, the amazing thing is, man, to give you just a quick little backstory in terms of community, I actually came into this as a patient. I had been dealing with migraines for the last 13 years, where I've averaged about 100 migraines every year.
Wow.
So it's been an endeavor. And I was diagnosed 5 years ago with a thing called Chiari malformation, which essentially is a fancy way of saying part of my brain took a permanent vacation outside of my skull, and it's hanging out by the bones of my neck.
Wow.
So I went every avenue that I could go for, man. I was trying to find some answers and went through all of the traditional models, and they said, you know what, we can take out some real estate back there, try and free up some space, or we can medicate you pretty heavily. Unfortunately, my tolerance for medication was pretty high. It's great when you want to have a drink, but not so good when you're having a migraine.
Yeah.
So you try all those avenues, and I was a full-time provider for my wife while she was in school, and we were guardians of her teenage brother, and I was like, I can't go unemployed, and I can't claim disability. It's not what I'm motivated to do. Yeah. So I started looking for other options, and you kind of navigate.
What were you
into,
doing at the time?
At the time, I was actually doing professional and corporate sales, where okay. I designed security systems for the top 5% of the money earners in Atlanta.
Okay.
So I did a concierge white glove service for yeah. high end clientele. Yeah. But I actually decided, you know what? Let me see what else is available. And fell in love with the approach of chiropractic and the opportunity to kind of do the repair and rehab side of it. But unfortunately, I didn't have one of those, you know, those miracle experiences that you have sometimes where you hear that somebody goes to the chiropractor and everything gets better. In fact, I ended up at another dead end where nothing seemed to work out. So I kind of found myself in this purgatory, this very lonely space where I could either go to the regular allopathic model and get part of my skull taken out and part of the bones of my neck taken out, or I could go to chiropractors who said, you know, we've never heard of what you have and we don't know what to do for it.
Wow.
So I decided, you know what, next best thing is I'm going to go back to school, figure it out for myself, because if there's a community of people like myself as patients who are being missed and they're kind of in that middle zone, that purgatory of sorts.
No lonely leader.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I was like, I see a problem there. Like, you know, we hear from plywood people and Jeff Schinnebarger. I was like, you know, there's a problem there. There's folks that are missing out.
Exactly.
So I fell in love with it and I got into it. And, you know, the incredible thing is, man, I am outrageously fortunate and blessed to have fallen into a community that does functional neurology. It's kind of a case of taking the regular neurology and going, okay, we're not just going to diagnose it and tell you what's going on, but we're actually going to see if we can do the crazy thing of fixing it. And I got the opportunity to mentor with the guy who started it himself, a guy named Frederick Carrick, or Ted Carrick. You might know him from things like he actually worked with Sidney Crosby. And after about 7 or 8 months of working with the best folks on the planet, Sidney Crosby got to a point where he couldn't go any further. My mentor, Ted Carrick, saw him for less than a week, and a week later he was on ESPN saying he was coming back. Scored 4 goals in his first game.
Wow. Yep.
So we do things in a very different approach, and I've apprenticed with him for the last 3 years, and we'll be graduating in 6 weeks. So just one extra tie-in for you, the thing that you mentioned about community, in my industry, the amazing thing is, and what I've found not only as a doctor but also as a patient, is in those situations there's such a sense and such a an environment of loneliness with people that are walking into those offices that they just are looking for a little bit of hope. They're looking for a little bit of engagement and the opportunity not to just be processed through transactionally within 3 to 5 minutes by their doctor and be forgotten about again. And the community that I've found in the industry that I work in is outrageous, because we have patients that come in and they'll spend a week to 6 days with us, and they'll be there for 4 to 5 hours a day. And the thing they say consistently over and over again is, it feels like family, it feels like home, and I've never, ever had anybody actually take an interest in listening and engaging with me. So it's an awesome opportunity for community.
Wow. That's really awesome. Thanks for saying all that. I didn't realize it was something that you got into because of your situation, which I think that's why I think I love social media, because you can kind of step into people's lives, you know, without – so, like, I know a lot of things about a lot of people because I – attempt to pay attention on their social media channels. So it's cool that we can take that. So I want to hear a little bit about knowing now that, okay, so Jerome, your background is in, hey, you know, here's something that I suffered from. So I wanted to go and help, you know, cure that. I wanted to figure out this issue on my own and then go and help other people who might sort of be in that same, direction. And where I've come from is Hive kind of birthed out of a similar situation. You know, me and Charlton and the other guys that I started Hive with, is we were just a group of friends and we all had these things that we wanted to do, and we kind of realized that we couldn't do them alone, and we tried and then we, you know, didn't succeed. And so, Jason, with you doing the 2D to 3D, which I want you to explain what that is, first of all. Second of all, I want you to tell where did that taking the 2D to 3D kind of come out of? Because I use it as a hashtag now, and you retweet it, and you retweet other people who use it now. So now it's kind of become this thing that people connect with. Hey, I met this person on Twitter, or I met this person on Facebook or Instagram, whatever, and now I'm friends with them in real life. I mean, that's essentially how I connected with you.
Yeah, exactly.
We met on social media, and then you showed up at the Hive gathering.
We did.
And we met in person. So explain that and where that came about for you.
So 2D to 3D came about when I read a report on social media, coincidentally, ironically, I should say, that talked about how social media was making people more and more distant and more disconnected. And I completely disagreed, because in my own personal life, it's made me more connected to both my friends and family on a regular basis. And so instead of just writing a post of this is bull crap, you know, this is lame, you know, I thought
which is
to myself,
so easy to do.
Which is so easy to do. And it is my nature, you yeah. know, to say this is crap, you know. I thought to myself, how can I go about proving this wrong?
You went to the guy's house and you said, this is crap, right?
So I said, I invited him to coffee. And
yeah.
so
yeah.
I decided,
liked his house.
I realized that a lot of what's made social media more connected for me is the relationships that I've made through Twitter and through Facebook, and how I've made those interactions real life is I've actually sought those engagements out.
Yeah.
And so what I did was I started every day, I looked through my followers list, people who would follow me, and if I didn't know who they were and they lived in Atlanta, I would just invite them to coffee or lunch. I would just say, hey, thanks for following me. Let's grab coffee or lunch sometime, because I felt like it was almost a little voyeuristic for yeah. me to allow you into my life, into my personal space, without us actually knowing each other. And I would look at their profile and go, hey, this is definitely something that someone who I could get value out of,
yeah,
or like,
yeah.
you know, a friendship. And so let's grab coffee or lunch. And I would just invite people to coffee or lunch, and I would just ask them their story. So tell me your story. And they would tell me their story, and then I would tell them a little bit of mine. And the majority, I would say probably 90% of those interactions, those 2D to 3D interactions I've had,
right.
are people that I converse with and communicate with on a daily basis today. So
wow.
it's actually been really beneficial. But the other thing is that it put forth an example that social media should be and can be an asset to your community, because the more that you know about the people that you engage with on a regular basis in social media, the more that you know about them in real life, the more that you can be a part of their life.
Well, and it makes those connections too. If I know you in real life, I'm going to pay a lot more attention to your tweets and
exactly.
what you're saying than just your number, another follower on my list. And we know how that goes sometimes. So.
Right.
Yeah. And I noticed that I'm more apt, which when it comes to, you know, being involved in people's lives, like if there are people that I'm you know I've been friends
mostly
with,
invested.
Yeah, but like I used to be really really close friends with, and now I'm just not as close to them, which is okay and normal, and it
yeah.
happens in life or whatever. But I still want a way into knowing how they're doing and what they're up to. Social media is such an easy way to stay connected to people. So I've always been confused too by why people think it takes away from, you know, your community and your interaction with other people, because I disagree with that.
Yeah, I think probably the most interesting thing that I've found with it is I think there's a very, very big difference, and there's a disconnect between getting the opportunity to engage with somebody and then when you're actually face-to-face and you're in that space with them, that you're no longer actually face-to-face with them. You're face-to-iPhone or face-to-iPad.
Yeah.
That there's a big difference between actually being able to connect with somebody and being present with them, which you can facilitate through social media.
Sure.
But when you're actually in the place, like when we do the Hive Gathering, when we were at the last one, at that sort of event, everybody's tweeted it, everybody's on Facebook about
sure.
it, everybody's engaged in it. But when you walk into that room or you watch the video that you guys posted up, there's nobody on their phone.
Right.
Everybody's face to face. So I think if you use it as an opportunity to actually facilitate the engagement, but once you're there, that you're present with somebody, that's where people are losing it.
Because
you see families that you're driving down the road, and here's dad sitting at the steering wheel, he's trying to figure out his 60-hour work week that he hasn't been able to chat with the kids, and every single person, front seat, back seat, left to right, is headphones in, iPhone on. You know,
yeah.
So
it's a shame. You walk through the store too. I mean, I'll walk through the store and see a mom and dad, and then their kid or two, and their kids are glued to an iPad or glued to a phone or something. And now you even go, like I was at Chili's the other day with my girlfriend, and there are these kiosks on the table now that have like games and mm-hmm. trivia and stuff. And I'm like, hey, this is really cool for her and I, because we're like playing the trivia game together, and it's, you know, we're having fun and laughing about it. But if you're with a family and you've got some kid who's screaming and yelling, you're giving them that to just shut them up, as opposed to talking with them and hearing about why they're yelling or screaming
what a revolutionary
right. Well, it's in a lot of different ways it's turned into a digital pacifier.
Yeah,
it's true.
You know,
wow.
But the incredible thing that I think with social media that I find in the environment that I'm in is so often patients and people that are in the community in terms of healthcare, whether it's a health coach or it's a doctor, whether you're seeing somebody for, you know, you're in great shape and you want to just make sure everything's great, or you're in the worst shape possible and you're figuring out kind of where to start and what the game plan is. It oftentimes is, as a patient, I understand this, it's very difficult to know whether or not your doctor is a real person. You know, or if it's just kind of a machine, and you have that context of I have no relationship with this person.
Right.
You know, so when you get to walk into a place that you've been able to see their website, or you've seen their Twitter account, or you've seen a video where they're sharing with you that this is who I am, this is what I'm about, I'm not just a white coat. You know, I'm not just a person who's going to write a prescription for you or give you some sort of intangible for 3 to 5 minutes, because the average patient visit with a doctor is less than 5 minutes, and they interrupt you in under 40 seconds by the time you sit on the table.
Wow.
So it's not something where you get. So when you get the social aspect of it with social media, you can really give people the opportunity to go, okay, I'm actually going to have a conversation with somebody who could be somebody I run into at a barbecue or at Hive.
And that's like part of the whole crux of the 2D to 3D is providing context in other folks' lives. So when you see someone going through something, how quickly do you offer advice? You say, you know, I'm sorry that you're going through this. Like, here's some advice. When if you have no real context of their life and you're giving them
it's BS
advice.
Yeah. Right.
On social media, it's BS because you don't know those people. I mean, you know them in a very 2D linear kind of way. But if you've sat down with them and had lunch and you know the things that they're going through and you offer them advice, it means a whole lot more because, like Jerome said, you know it's a real person.
Yeah.
You kind of have when you have that eye to eye, like you almost you make a connection that you don't get just 2D to.
I think Jerome made a really good point earlier that these social media networks, they're tools to help leverage and build relationships, but they're not there to replace the relationships themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think what is so critical to what you're saying, Jason, is that you know, a lot of times people will follow someone and then it's just that. It's a very one-sided relationship. Either you're as the person who's pushing out the content, who's being followed, you're just yelling at everyone, telling them about your opinions and what you think and what sports teams you care about, what you had for dinner and, you know, whatever. And then you interact on a certain level, and then the person that's listening does no interaction back. And so it's just, I'm just listening or I'm just yelling at you. Whereas what I love about 2D to 3D is it's saying, let's get past that. It's not just me telling you about the delicious Dave Poe's barbecue that I had yesterday, which I saw your tweet, and it made me want that.
Yes, I did.
But it's also not me just wanting to know about you and your Dave Poe's barbecue, but I have an opportunity to ask you how it was, and should I go, and when should I go, and would you want to do that together? And that's what I think is interesting. So, you know, experiences like the Hive Gathering, when I actually did meet you in person, I met both of you in person, which Jerome, I didn't know. I apologize, but I didn't know who you were then. But
the room was full. It's okay.
I didn't know who he was then either.
Oh,
actually.
Wow.
My wife wasn't sure who I was at that point either.
He's still not sure who he is.
Yeah, it's okay. Welcome to the planet.
It's an identical twin syndrome. Yeah. Man, you just don't know.
But Jason, you know, one of the things that was cool was I was able to, knowing you, you know, you got there because we tweeted out a discount code or something, and then he showed up or got a free ticket, I even think is how you got there. And and you showed up, and we, you know, I knew a little bit about you because I saw who you were on Twitter. I'd already known about 2D to 3D because I was paying attention. I knew what you were into. I knew that you're into coffee. I knew that you're into beer. I knew that you're into good food. And, you know, I knew that you're into community. And so it was like,
are we still talking about Jason here?
A great, yes. Do those things describe you as well?
Very much.
That's good.
It's good, Justin. I mean, Jerome.
But it was just a cool opportunity for me to have been listening to you on social media, to interact with you, and then take that and then utilize that information that I've learned about you from social media to be able to carry on a nice human face-to-face conversation with you when I actually met you. And I felt like I already knew you.
It's a really important for people to understand that social media is not the ballroom where everybody gets to hang out and get to know each other. Social media is the lobby. So social media is the lobby which allows you into that building, but really that those interactions should happen in real life. That social media should be the lobby where all of those different kind of engagements take place. It's not the place where all of that should take place.
That's great. Because that's what we – go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, the interesting thing that I love about that comment that Jason just made is also what I saw at the Hive last time, and this is kind of the cultural shift that you're seeing within social entrepreneurship and these different communities in Atlanta is it's going much more from a what can I get from you mentality to what can I give to you.
Yeah, what can I do for you?
So if you're looking at the basics of like what we're talking about today, which is relational equity, equity by default means I have a vested interest. I'm a partner with you in this because I own a certain percentage of it. Not that we can own each other, but that you understand that there's actually an investment and a partnership in it so that when you tell me, okay, we sold out Hive, I get to celebrate that with you.
Right.
The old culture of business and competition would say, okay, well, I need to figure out how to do something similar, and I might need to take some of the people that are coming to your event because I want mine to be as successful. I don't hear about yours and celebrate with you because there isn't that relational equity.
Sure.
Instead, it's much more of a competitive nature. And I love that shift that's happening in Atlanta where we can go, okay, let's just – like Jason said, let me get together and let me have coffee with you. I've never met you. Let me have that serendipitous moment of saying, hey – I haven't heard your story, and then all of a sudden you're like, wow, you actually fed into me, and I didn't even talk to you. I just listened.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, that's good. And I think that – and you nicely transitioned to Hive there. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. And that's what we've attempted to create with Hive is we've attempted to say, hey, let's be really, really good at social media, not so that this is free publicity and just to just tell everybody about what we're doing, but to genuinely connect with people. And we've seen that. We've seen a lot of success in doing that. And I guess coming from you guys who may have saw us on Twitter or whatever, Instagram before the Hive Gathering happened back in October of last year, what was your knowledge of and kind of thought process walking into the gathering and then post-gathering, what were things that you learned? What were some things that you like if somebody is listening to this right now, what would your testimony of Hive Gathering and social media and what you know about us before and then now being a part of our community, what's the value in someone coming to that?
Yeah, I'll start with that. You know, I think probably the most interesting thing is when I first started or I first heard about the Hive Gathering is actually from my wife, Deborah, who was working for Land of a Thousand Hills at the time, and now she's with Wellspring Living. And she's engaged in that community a lot more than I have the opportunity to be when I'm buried in schoolwork 80 hours a week and working in clinics. And she knows, you know, where I want to develop community in Atlanta regarding healthcare and leadership.
Sure.
For entrepreneurs. And she came home one day and she's like, hey, this thing's happening where they're doing it's called a Hive Gathering. And I said, well, what's it about? And she said, essentially, it's just an opportunity for leaders who don't get a lot of opportunity to engage to create community. And I'm like, well, I think that's awesome. Like-minded people creating community. But the first thought that came to mind for me was there are folks that are trying to do that, but they don't necessarily succeed at it. So my litmus was, let me go and let me see if you actually feel like you've fostered community. And when I left, absolutely felt like I'd fostered community. Because one of the things when you walk in the room is it's kind of like going to a concert, right? If you watch a DVD at home, it's a pretty good experience. But if you go and see that concert in person and you have that energy and that atmosphere of everybody else who's just as excited to be there as you are, you leave feeling with your feeling and your experience is completely different.
Very true.
And having walked away from Hive in October, you get that opportunity to go, you know what? I'm really, really looking forward to getting together with some of these folks, breaking bread, and just getting an opportunity to hear more than just, you know, the snapshot of where they're at. And you almost walk away going, if I don't make time to have coffee and lunch with these people, I'm an idiot, you know?
Yeah.
So the goal was me. I hear, okay, they're trying to develop a community. I show up to see if that's happening. I leave believing that it did, which was great.
That's cool. Thank you. That's really encouraging. Wow. Yeah. Jason?
I don't know that I can follow that up.
I know.
I don't.
Amen? That's
a
testimonial for us. Thank
amen.
You.
Amen. Record. For me, I didn't really have a good understanding of what Hive was, so yeah. I didn't really have an understanding of what it was. I watched looked at the website, and I thought it's just a meeting of young leaders, which I can be on board with because I always love learning from leaders. And so for me, that was kind of the idea of what Hive was going to be about. So I walked in kind of by myself thinking that I wouldn't know anybody there. And it turns out I did know a few people there. And so that made me feel a little bit more comfortable. And
who did you know that was there? Sorry, I'm just curious.
No, I knew Jonathan Shelton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who was there? Jonathan's a great guy.
He is.
Shout out to Jonathan Shelton.
I'm not sure if his wife Candy was there, but
she was not there.
She was not able to be there. They both bought a ticket, but she wasn't able to come. She had to watch the kids.
He's got a great beard too.
He does have a great beard, and he's become a really good friend of ours too.
And they do. What's the organization they have? Let's show them some love.
I don't remember the specific name.
She makes
name for it.
Some of the most outrageous cupcakes on the planet.
She makes some of the most outrageous everything. Yeah. But
well, we'll tweet them and tell them that we talked about them.
I'm trying to think of the exact name, but anyway, they've started a really cool project, and Jonathan Shelton, and then I knew Jerome's wife Deb, and I knew Zanna.
Oh yeah. XK Macaroons.
Yep, that's right.
I rep her.
I knew
her all the time
from the coffee community. And so I felt a little bit more comfortable about what was going on. And the thing that really impressed me was from the 2D to 3D thing was the fact that a lot of it was built around hearing other folks' stories and engaging in their lives through hearing their stories. Because, you know, it was like, what do you do? You know, how can I help you? Which I found extremely refreshing, because so much of our culture is how can you help me? And Hive was all about how can we help you? You know, I think that was like it was on the notebook, and you know, the whole idea behind it was, what can I do to help you? Which I found really refreshing, because it's not selfishly driven.
So I've been doing some Googling. It's Jonathan Shelton's organization at Sycamore Abbey.
Sycamore Abbey. Thank you. That's good. That's exactly
right. It's not his Twitter page, so that's how I got that.
They're at Sycamore Abbey.
Yeah, they're awesome, awesome, awesome people. It's a great couple.
They have amazing hearts. Yeah, they have amazing hearts, and they definitely want to make a difference. So Jonathan Candy Shelton.
And I was just going to, if I can jump in with one comment, one of the things that I love when I talk to Jonathan, which is the same when I talk to you guys and a lot of the folks at Hive, is that you can just really tell the difference when somebody is completely present with you.
Yeah.
You know, and Jonathan's one of those guys that when you're in the middle of having a conversation with people at Hive, it is like a hornet's nest. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of buzz. You're shouting to have the conversation sometimes. But everybody is so personable and so engaged that in that 3 to 5 to 10 minute window that you're with somebody, you are with that person,
right?
And that's something that's really hard to replace.
Yeah, and I want to highlight those questions that you said that we created. I'm so glad that you remember that, because it's so important to us, and it really is why we were there, is to say, what are you working on, where are you headed, and how can I help? And we really do care about where people are, and then where they're actually wanting to be if they're not in the place that they want to be forever, and then what we can do to help them get there. And it's cool, because we've seen, you know, incredible things happen from just those three questions. Van Baird, who is, you know, typically the host of this show, Relational Equity, was started out of an inspiration and conversations that he was having at our event in May of last year, so almost a year ago. And we've seen, you know, nonprofit foundations get started. You know, thousands of dollars in revenue have come in for various different companies, and all that has come because we've attempted to create a culture that's about helping other people succeed. So that's really encouraging to hear you guys say that. Who are some people that you think outside of just, you know, Hive and the community that you've gotten there, that are also facilitating really healthy community? What are other organizations that are doing community really well?
Well, I mean, obviously, we could talk about Plywood People.
Absolutely.
We've talked about them on the show before.
Yeah.
Plywood People, and what Jeff Schenebarger's doing is phenomenal. Just a phenomenal heart.
In August coming up that
Plywood Presents. Yeah.
They do.
Yeah, and they're actually, I would highly recommend for everybody. I actually had lunch with Jeff yesterday. They're selling out of that stuff pretty quickly.
Yeah. They're,
so if you haven't already got a ticket, I
think they only have like 600 or so available.
Yeah.
Which that's way bigger than a Hive event, because we sell out at like 60 people, and we do that by choice, but it's two different styles of events. But yeah, they're going super quickly.
Yeah, and I think your early adopter opportunity is actually done, where you get a discounted rate by Thursday. Anybody wants to do that, I'd probably save the money. That way you can take somebody out to lunch when you get there, you know?
Perfect.
But Plywood People is obviously great. I think a lot of what the folks are doing at Tech Atlanta Village is pretty amazing.
I was going to say, a lot of the David things that Cummins. I'm thinking of are tech-related. So I think of like Scott Henderson, who does the homegrown Southern Fried. Scott Henderson was with Hypopotamus, and they're working really hard to create
speaking at the Hive Gathering.
He is speaking, now that I think about it. He is speaking.
So Scott, weird coincidence.
Weird coincidence. Yeah. Scott Henderson is a really good friend of mine, and he's an incredible passionate human here in Atlanta, and he's incredibly passionate about building community in the tech community. And so I think about Scott and what Scott's doing there, and then of course what the folks are doing over at Atlanta Tech Village.
Atlanta Tech Village.
A lot of my friends are there.
And there's actually two other people that came to mind for me. One, some folks and some of your listeners may know, is Lehman Luther. You know, that company that Brian Preston started, where they're doing all the woodworking with the unemployed and homeless woodworkers and folks that have been in the construction industry. There, anybody who knows Brian and anybody who knows Lehman Luther, it automatically pops into your mind just the culture and the community that's built around that.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. Another one that some of your listeners may not know is Love Gives Way. Which is done by a gentleman named Andy Brophy.
Andy Brophy.
Yeah, Andy Brophy has been doing Love Gives Way full time. He's an incredible photographer. He's probably one of the best that I've ever met. And my first degree was in digital animation and film, so I'm as picky on my photos as I am on my music, and my beer and coffee. But Andy's doing this thing where the thing with his community is he's taking everybody and he wants to change the wedding industry. So you take all of the people who are...
Which is such a selfish industry.
Right.
You know, I mean, it really is. It's about, you know, a four-hour event that you get to live for one day and you spend all this money. So
which is why it's...
Selfish might be a harsh word.
Well, I mean, it's the perception is different, right? I mean, it's so focused on just one or two people.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's bride. Sometimes the husband gets to be a part of that, but, you know, he's at least there for the ceremony.
Yeah.
But the thing, one of the slogans that Andy has for Love Gives Way is make your one day her every day. Right.
That's good.
So you get an opportunity to take everybody who's engaged in this wedding industry and say, let's just take the opportunity to step back for a second and understand that there are a lot of people that are hurting. And he works with Wellspring Living and sex trafficking industries. But that community that he's building around Love Gives Way and taking that shift away from how can I make my day better to how can I make everybody who's engaged in this industry better in a long term course it's an incredible thing.
Yeah, that's a great one. Did you have another one?
Yeah, I would say like my favorite local organization is the Giving Kitchen, which was sponsored by which was started by Jen and Ryan Heidinger, and Jen is carrying on that legacy through the Giving Kitchen and Staple House. And the Giving Kitchen is an amazing organization that helps to provide funds and things for folks in the restaurant industry when they're down, when they're experiencing hard times, like the Heidingers have experienced.
Yeah.
Over the past year. And so the Giving Kitchen is just an amazing organization that's helping that community, the whole food community, by taking care of each other and taking care of themselves. And one of the cool things that's been cool to see out of that, the Giving Kitchen, is that it's brought the food community in Atlanta together. So that's why when they do these Team Heidi and Giving Kitchen events, you'll see all of the local chefs come together to support
us. Yeah, we've had a lot
us.
Of them actually on the air. So.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's cool.
And I think that's, you know, the communities that we've mentioned in the last 10 minutes, I think the biggest shift that you're seeing, which is a huge trigger as a result of the availability to see it on social media, is that normally we read those stories like that and we feel good about it, but we don't engage in it.
Yeah, you don't do it.
And every single one of those communities is so focused on saying, okay, you actually have an opportunity to partner with us. We're not just sharing this story so that we can show how great we're doing and we can make you feel good. We're sharing it with you because the more people that partner with us, the better that it is and the more people that it affects. And obviously with the Giving Kitchen, that's a great example. And it's just – it's amazing to see how many people are getting into this collaborative space through social media. It's amazing.
It really is. And the thing that I'm seeing in Atlanta so often – and, you know, you mentioned Jeff Schinneberger and Plywood, and they're absolute – and I've said this every time I've been on the radio show, which is – this is my third time. I've mentioned them every time because of how influential they are to us and what they've created, you know, and they solve a lot of problems and they create really intentional communities as well. And so we're huge fans of them. But the thing that I'm seeing with that type of community and with what we've attempted to create at Hive, something that we do where I work at Rome, which is another co-working space here in Atlanta. We're a corporate meeting space, also co-working, and our kind of battle cry is invested community. How are we creating invested community? And we do that through a number of different ways, events and things that we do there at Rome to create that invested community with our members and with guests. But it really is about how helping one another succeed. It's how do we bring people together, utilize all of our gifts for the best of everyone. And something that we say often at at Hive is we take authentic community and intentional collaboration, and we bring those together for the ultimate impact. Because when we take, you know, collaboration where we're partnering together and we're thinking about things and we're trying to solve problems, and then we throw in authentic community with that, that's how you make the greatest impact. And we firmly believe that the greatest path to success is the path that leads other people to it. So if the more we are about leading other people to success, the more successful we in turn are.
Amen.
Because we're all in this together. And that's something that we've attempted to do with Hive. And that's why we've intentionally crafted the experience to be the way that it is. It's why we've intentionally chose guys like Scott Henderson, who are doing phenomenal jobs of creating community in their own individual ways. Our other keynote speaker for the event is Hannah Brencher, who, if you guys aren't aware of who she is, you know, she was in a pretty down season of life, and she was under a lot of anxiety and depression, and she started writing anonymous love letters to people and dropping them in library books in New York City. And it started catching on, and all these people were starting to talk about what is this that's going on. And she's 25 years old, now has a nonprofit organization that's on thousands of, or hundreds of college campuses across the country. She speaks all over the country to college campuses, and her TED Talk has over a million views. And it, because she realized there are people out there that were hurting, that they needed people around them. And so she has, you know, started this organization that rallies around them. And it's, you know, and that's just so cool to me that Atlanta is becoming a hub for where we, it's not just about what we have to offer. You know, it's not just about what I can do and what I can get out of, get from you, but it's also about what I can give to you and help you with. And that's why I was curious to see where you guys were seeing some of that in the different spaces that you have. Kevin, did you have something to say?
No, I just think it's beautiful.
Cool.
It's beautiful. I got a little tear in my eye. It is beautiful. I love what you guys are doing. So.
Well, thank you.
Well, a couple of years ago, my wife and I spent a couple of weeks in Uganda with an organization called Bloodwater Mission.
Yeah.
And Bloodwater Mission is an incredible organization that helps to fund clean water wells and medication to HIV clinics all over Eastern Africa. And my wife and I had the opportunity to go there and spend a couple of weeks. And one of the things that we found out really quickly, we spent the majority of our time deep in the bush. I mean, in villages that some of them had never seen folks with my skin color. It was incredibly eye-opening to see how these villages operate on a regular basis. But one of the things that really humbled me and that really has changed my life is that you would go into these villages and they actually take up money. Each of them takes up money from each family, and they all put it into a pot, and they use that pot to take care of each other. So they put into a general fund that helps in case it's very much like the Giving Kitchen. Actually, they pay into a fund. Every family in that village pays into a fund so that if something happens with one of those families, they pull that money from that fund and they take care of each other.
Wow. That's cool.
So they have a daily lifestyle of taking care of each other in these villages because there's no one else there, right? They're so
That's
far remote. It's them or nothing. And we're not as much like that, right? We can surround ourselves with hundreds of people. And the unfortunate thing is that we don't live our lives looking to see who we can take care of except for ourselves. And that taught me a new definition of what community is. It's how can I pull what I do and what I have to help in the community with people that are hurting and going through real life.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I appreciate you guys, and I've really enjoyed getting to know a little bit more about what each of you do and how each of you think about community. So I know Jerome, Jason, I don't know about you, and I'm not mad at you if you can't, but you know, Hive Gathering's coming up on Tuesday night. I hope to see.
I'm there.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm already there.
I'm already there.
Awesome. And and if you're listening, then we want our listeners to join us there as well. It's Tuesday night. We'll open the doors around 7 o'clock. We'll get started around 7:30. Scott Henderson, Hannah Brencher are speaking. A funny Atlanta guy who, if you guys know Chop Armstrong.
Chop.
Or, you know, El Oso Blanco is the song. What was his first one?
That was the Braves.
Oh, he's going to be so mad at me.
He is.
He's going to be so mad
at me. I met him at last year's Hive. He was one of the
Aaron
guys
Tuning?
I met with. Yeah,
cool.
Aaron Tuning.
Yeah. So Aaron Tuning's going to be our host for this one. He's a comedian.
So
it's
funny.
Gonna, it's going to be great.
I was like, I met the Aaron Tuning?
Yes.
And he was like a normal guy.
Beast from the East. That's what it was.
Yeah, Beast from the East.
Yes.
He's freaking hilarious.
Well, so he's going to be hosting.
Are you guys talking about the Braves player, Osso Blanco?
Evan Gattis. Yes, but Aaron Tuning did a song about El Osso Blanco called Osso Blanco.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I'll probably just Google it.
I just invited you to the gathering as well.
I'm going to have to come. I really want to come check it out. I do a lot of entrepreneur stuff on myself. I've been doing through ideation and going through some accelerator programs myself. So
we want you guys there Tuesday night. It's going to be at Rome in Dunwoody, which is just down the road from the studio here, but 1155 Mount Vernon Highway. Look at me.
Sweet 800.
It's right by the LA Fitness, so you can work out.
It's a little hidden. It's like a secret bat cave.
So. It's there. So we're really excited. So thank you guys for being a part and being active in our community. It means a lot.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah,
no, we're absolutely.
Excited. All right. Well, this is Kevin Finn for Jake Dudley. Great job today, by the way.
Thank you. My first time.
And our guest today and everyone here at the Business Radio X family is saying we'll see you next week on Emerging Enterprises.